This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Tomorrow, the deadline is reached for sequestration, the automatic across-the-board budget cuts that will take effect if the President and Congress cannot reach a deficit reduction deal. Both sides have been talking about it for a long time, and negotiations will continue into tomorrow. Republican Georgia Senator Johnny Isakson is a member of the Senate Finance Committee. He joins us now from Washington. Senator Isakson, welcome back. Good to have you.
Good to be with you, Dennis.
We've heard a lot from both sides saying these sequestration cuts would be everything from the end of the world, only a problem if they take full effect, and it will take a while for them to take full effect, or no problem at all. Where are you on this?
Well, sequestration was designed to be a poison pill that Congress would not take, so it would force Congress to do its job. Unfortunately, Congress has not done its job either in budgeting or appropriating, and because of that, the sequester kicks in. It's not the first time we've had sequestration, by the way. The Graham Rudman Act, Graham Rudman Hollings of 1986, caused a sequestration then for a short period of time, and the result here, I think, will be the same as the result there, and that is once sequestration hits, starts to take effect, Congress will be inundated by those who are affected by the changes, and we'll find out the shortcomings of cutting across the board versus cutting based on a cost-benefit analysis, and we will end the sequestration and allocate the cuts necessary, the amounts in the aggregate that need to be cut to the agencies, and let them cut on a cost-benefit basis rather than across the board while we get our act together and begin to go back to the process of budgeting and appropriating like Congress should.
How concerned are you that Georgia might feel the effects sooner than everyone else? Because we have sort of three major areas that could feel the effects fairly quickly. One, the Centers for Disease Control. Two, air traffic control. And three, some of the low-income areas of the state which depend very heavily on the federal funding for some of their school programs.
Well, quite frankly, I think the main effect will be felt in those areas around military bases in Georgia, because that's the largest amount of the cuts that are taking place in the Department of Defense. Arne Duncan's statement in education the other day about teachers being furloughed and laid off has been taken back by the administration, because that was more of a scare tactic than a truthful thing. The concern about the air traffic controllers is a legitimate concern in terms of stretching the manpower, but it's not a concern in terms of air safety and airworthiness. So I think it will be felt mostly in those communities around major base installations, Hinesville, Georgia, where Fort Stewart is, Fort Benning in Columbus, Warner Robins and Robins Air Force Base in Middle Georgia. Those would be the places that probably would feel it if it's felt at all.
Now, you mentioned a moment ago, you said Congress hasn't done its job. So does that mean you support the plan that some of your Republican colleagues in the Senate have offered, which would say, okay, let's stop the across-the-board cuts, turn over, give the president a week to make those merit-based cuts, if you will, and give him until March 8th, and then if he doesn't do that, then we'll go back to square one. Is that something that you would sign on to?
Well, that's an alternative that certainly would work, and there's one thing you left out in that alternative. If you give the president the authority to make the cuts, Congress, through the Senate, has the right of a resolution of disapproval, which would mean the Senate could override it if he made political cuts or inappropriate cuts. So that's one way to skin the cat, but I think the best way to do it is to do what I said earlier, and that's take the $44 billion that needs to be cut in the remainder of this fiscal year, assign it across the agencies, give the agencies the opportunity to make the cuts themselves rather than use across-the-board cuts on sequestration. They know where the fat is. They know where the most important programs are that don't need to be cut, and they know where there's room to cut. So that's the way we ought to do it.
Would the agencies do that, do you think, though?
Well, and the funny thing about this, Dennis, is the benefit of the threat of sequestration is so bad, any alternative looks good to the agencies, including making their own cuts rather than sequestering them.
One of the things that has come out of this, at least what the Democrats say has come out of this, is a feeling that the GOP in the Senate and on the House can't get together either across the Capitol or perhaps inside their own chambers. Claire McCaskill was quoted in Politico. She says, one day the Republicans are saying Obama's got too much power. The next day they're saying give him all the power. It gets confusing.
Well, what's not confusing is the fact that Harry Reid, the Democratic leader of the Senate for four consecutive years, has refused to either bring a budget to the floor or let us do appropriations bills the way we're supposed to do them. That's not a Republican problem. That's a leadership problem in the Senate with Harry Reid. So with all due respect to Ms. McCaskill, the whiplash is the House has passed every appropriations bill it was supposed to, and they've passed a budget, and the Senate has done nothing.
How does this blame game, though, help anyone? There seems to be, while people are not as concerned immediately about sequestration as they were about, say, a government shutdown, there's a rising frustration with, again, the gridlock in Washington, which this sequestration was supposed to avoid by forcing a solution.
Well, in this interview, the blame game has only been brought up by you, not me, and I think that's reflective of one of the problems. The press would rather focus on where people are fighting than where people are actually solving problems, which is why I said I think sequestration is actually going to be healthy for us, because it's going to force us to do our job, because after a couple of weeks, the effects of sequestration will be so damaging that people will come forward and say, do your job, get it done, appropriate and budget like you're supposed to. And I think that message will be heard by Harry Reid and by Republicans as well, and the Senate will finally get its act together.
Certainly, I would never deny that folks in the media love a good fight, but isn't part of the reason that we're at this impasse because the folks who have the power have not been able to come together?
Well, that's true, but the leadership that sets the agenda, you know, in the House, the Speaker of the House, who is the majority of the party's representative, which is John Boehner, controls the agenda in the House, and the Senate, the majority leader of the party that's in the majority, which in this case is the Democrats and Harry Reid, controls the agenda on the floor of the Senate. And it's one thing to have differences in debate on the floor. That's the history of the institution. That's the way we're supposed to do it. It's quite another thing to make the executive decision, as Harry Reid has done. We're just not going to allow debates at all. I'm not going to let the bills come to the floor. So that's why we've got to get the functioning to regular order back so we can do our business.
Is the bigger issue a possible government shutdown on March 27th?
No. That's not an issue. The House has said they're not going to do it. We certainly are not going to do it. What will happen, and this is a prediction, Dennis, but when the 27th of March comes, we will do a continuing resolution for the remainder of the year, and in that resolution we'll designate the amounts each agency must cut rather than have sequestration.
Again, turning it over to them to say where they would cut. Is that
basically
the idea?
That's right.
So what will be the long-term effect of this? Will we get a budget passed eventually?
The long-term effect, I think, would be we'll never want to revisit what we've gone through the last couple of years with one self-contrived deadline or fiscal cliff or crisis after another, and recognize the country expects us to do our business and do our job the way it was designed, and that's to appropriate and budget appropriately. So I think this is the beginning of the end of the frustration of gridlock. And we now have the inspiration of desperation in terms of the motivation to get our job done. So I think this is the darkness before the dawn.
We've heard that before, though, with the fiscal cliff. What's different this time, do you think, in the way your colleagues are looking at this?
Well, Dennis, remember the fiscal cliff, we solved the problem. On 2:30 a.m. on January 1st, we came together on a bipartisan agreement, 88-9, which is a pretty bipartisan vote if you ever had one, to fix the tax code, address the concerns, make tax rates permanent rather than sunsetting them every couple of years, solve the estate tax problem, equalize capital gains and dividends, did a good job and got that done. There's no more cliff involved in terms of a fiscal cliff on taxes. We now have not a cliff, but a head wall we're running straight into with a Congress that hasn't been willing to do appropriations. As I've already explained twice, I think what's going to happen is that we'll sever the sequestration and instead turn it over to the agencies to make the appropriate cuts necessary, and then never revisit this process again by going back to the regular order of appropriating and budgeting.
You're a new member of the Senate Finance Committee. What role do you and will you and the committee play in this?
Well, the Finance Committee has jurisdiction over all tax, over all Social Security, over all Medicare, and over health insurance. So we obviously have a huge agenda. And one thing you haven't brought up and nobody ever wants to bring up, but is the 350-pound gorilla in the living room is our entitlements. And all those entitlement programs go through the Finance Committee. And I think reform of Social Security and Medicare will be an important and necessary solution to a part of our fiscal problems.
You got ahead of me because that was the next question, which was, can you negotiate a deal with Democrats on entitlement reform?
Well, I was a salesman for 33 years. I never go into a transaction not thinking I can be successful. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be difficult. But the reality is that's where the money is. It's like the guy, I forgot, the big great bank robber in Boston who robbed so many banks. They asked Willie why he always robbed banks. He said, that's where the money is. Well, that's where the money is in terms of expenditures in Washington. It's the entitlement programs. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, SSI, disability, AFDC, food stamps, all those mandatory programs that are appropriated by formula rather than by act of Congress, now are $2.5 trillion, which is over double the amount of discretionary spending. We spend $3.7 trillion, but $2.5 trillion are entitlements. They need to be reformed, and over time that can help us bring our fiscal house in order.
Quick political question. There's been a lot of speculation now that Senator Chambliss has decided not to run for re-election about what your plans are for 2016. Have you decided that you will seek another term in 2016?
Well, I had a fundraiser this morning.
I'll take that as a yes. Should I?
I wouldn't be asking people to make an investment in something that wasn't going to happen. I look forward to being a part of that and look forward to remain in the United States Senate and to have the honor of representing the people of the state of Georgia.
Georgia Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson, a member of the Senate Finance Committee. Senator Isaacson, thanks so much for this time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis.